Chapter 10. They took a great many precautions, all absolutely useless, for nothing can change the end, written and filed away, of the present chapter. Only Lucette and the agency that forwarded letters to him and to Ada knew Vaughn's address. Through an amiable lady-in-waiting at De Mons Bank, Vaughn made sure that his father would not turn up in Manhattan before March 30th. They never came out or went in together, arranging a meeting place at the library or in an emporium whence to start the day's excursions. And it so happened that the only time they broke that rule, she having got stuck in the lift for a few panicky moments and he having blithely trotted downstairs from their common summit, they issued right into the visual field of old Mrs. R4, who happened to be passing by their front door with her tiny tan and gray long silk Yorkshire terrier. The simultaneous association was immediate and complete. She had known both families for years and was now interested to learn from chattering, rather than chatting, Ada, that Vaughn had happened to be in town just when she, Ada, had happened to return from the West, that Marina was fine, that Damon was in Mexico or Oxmice, and that Lenore Colleen had a similar adorable pet with a similar adorable parting along the middle of the back. That same day, February 3rd, 1893, Vaughn re-bribed the already gorged janitor to have him answer all questions which any visitor, and especially a dentist's widow with a caterpillar dog, might ask about any Veens, with a brief assertion of utter ignorance. The only personage they had not reckoned with was the old scoundrel usually portrayed as a skeleton or an angel. Vaughn's father had just left one Santiago to view the results of an earthquake in another when Lodore Hospital cabled that Dan was dying. He set off at once for Manhattan, eyes blazing, wings whistling. He had not many interests in life. At the airport of the moonlit white town we call Tent, and Turbakov's sailors who built it, called Palatka, in northern Florida, where, owing to engine trouble, he had to change planes, Damon made a long-distance call and received a full account of Dan's death from the inordinately circumstantial Dr. Nukulin, grandson of the great rodentologist Kunikulinov. We can't get rid of the lettuce. Daniel Veen's life had been a mixture of the ready-made and the grotesque, but his death had shown an artistic streak because of its reflecting, as his cousin, not his doctor, instantly perceived, the man's latterly conceived passion for the paintings and faked paintings associated with the name of Hieronymus Bosch. Next day, February 5th, around 9 a.m., Manhattan, winter time, on the way to Dan's lawyer, Damon noted, just as he was about to cross Alexis Avenue, an ancient but insignificant acquaintance, Mrs. R4, advancing toward him, with her toy terrier, along his side of the street. Unhesitatingly, Damon stepped off the curb, and having no hat to raise, hats were not worn with rain cloaks, and besides, he had just taken a very exotic and potent pill to face the day's ordeal on top of a sleepless journey, contented himself quite properly with a wave of his slim umbrella. Recalled with a paint dab of delight one of the gargle girls of her late husband, and smoothly passed in front of a slow-clopping, horse-drawn vegetable cart, well out of the way of Mrs. R4. But precisely in regard to such a contingency, fate had prepared an alternate continuation. As Damon rushed, or in terms of the pill, sauntered by the Monaco, where he had often lunched, it occurred to him that his son, whom he had been unable to contact, might still be living with dull little Cordula Dupre in the penthouse apartment of that fine building. He had never been up there. Or had he? For a business consultation with Vaughn? On a sun-hazed terrace? And a clouded drink? He had. That's right. But Cordula was not dull and had not been present. With the simple and, combinationally speaking, neat thought that, after all, there was but one sky, white with minute multicolored optical sparks, Damon hastened to enter the lobby and catch the lift which a ginger-haired waiter had just entered with breakfast for two on a wiggle-wheel table and the Manhattan Times among the shining, ever so slightly scratched, silver cupolas. "Was his son still living up there?" automatically asked Demon, placing a piece of nobler metal among the domes.
"See,"
conceded the grinning imbecile. "He had lived there with his lady all winter."
"Then we are fellow travelers,"
said Demon, inhaling not without gourmand anticipation the smell of Monaco's coffee, exaggerated by the shadows of tropical weeds waving in the breeze of his brain. On that memorable morning, Vaughn, after ordering breakfast, had climbed out of his bath and donned a strawberry-red terry-cloth robe, when he thought he heard Valerio's voice from the adjacent parlor. Thither he padded, humming tunelessly, looking forward to another day of increasing happiness, with yet another uncomfortable little edge smoothed away, another raw kink in the past so refashioned as to fit into the new pattern of radiance. Demon, clothed entirely in black, black-spatted, black-scarved, his monocle on a broader black ribbon than usual, was sitting at the breakfast table, a cup of coffee in one hand and a conveniently folded financial section of the Times in the other. He gave a slight start and put down his cup rather jerkily on noting the coincidence of color with a persistent detail in an illumined lower left-hand corner of a certain picture reproduced in the copiously illustrated catalog of his immediate mind. All Vaughn could think of saying was, "I am not alone. Je ne suis pas seul." But Demon was brimming too richly with the bad news he had brought to heed the hint of the fool who should have simply walked on into the next room and come back one moment later, locking the door behind him, locking out years and years of lost life, instead of which he remained standing near his father's chair. According to Bess, which is fiend in Russian, Dan's buxom but otherwise disgusting nurse, whom he preferred to all others and had taken to Ardis because she managed to extract orally a few last drops of plaisiro, as the old whore called it, out of his poor body. He had been complaining for some time, even before Ada's sudden departure, that a devil combining the characteristics of a frog and a rodent desired to straddle him and ride him to the torture house of eternity. To Dr. Nikulin, Dan described his rider as black, pale-bellied, with a black dorsal buckler shining like a dung beetle's back, and with a knife in his raised forelimb. On a very cold morning in late January, Dan had somehow escaped, through a basement maze and a tool room, into the brown shrubbery of Ardis. He was naked, except for a red bath towel which trailed from his rump like a kind of caparison, and despite the rough going, had crawled on all fours like a crippled steed under an invisible rider deep into the wooded landscape. On the other hand, had he attempted to warn her, she might have made her big Ada yawn and uttered something irrevocably cozy at the moment he opened the thick protective door.
"I beg you, sir," said Vaughn, "go down and I'll join you in the bar as soon as I'm dressed. I'm in a delicate situation." "Come, come," retorted Demon, dropping and replacing his monocle. "Cordula won't mind."
"It's another, much more impressionable girl."
"Yet another awful fumble." "Damn Cordula. Cordula is now Mrs. Tobak."
"Oh, of course," cried Demon. "How stupid of me. I remember Ada's fiancé telling me. He and young Tobak worked for a while in the same Phoenix bank." "Of course. Splendid, broad-shouldered, blue-eyed, blonde chap. Back Bay Tobakovich."
"I don't care," said clenched Vaughn, "if he looks like a crippled, crucified albino toad. Please, Dad, I really must."
"Funny you're saying that. I've dropped in only to tell you poor cousin Dan has died an odd Boschian death. He thought a fantastic rodent sort of rode him out of the house. They found him too late. He expired in Nikulin's clinic, raving about that detail of the picture. I'm having the deuce of a time rounding up the family. The picture is now preserved in the Vienna Academy of Art."
"Father, I'm sorry, but I'm trying to tell you."
"If I could write," mused Demon, "I would describe in too many words, no doubt, how passionately, how incandescently, how incestuously, c'est le mot, art and science meet
in an insect, in a thrush, in a thistle of that ducal basket. Ada is marrying an outdoor man, but her mind is a closed museum, and she, and dear Lucette, once drew my attention, by a creepy coincidence, to certain details of that other triptych, that tremendous garden of tongue-in-cheek delights circa 1500, and namely to the butterflies in it, a meadow brown, female, in the center of the right panel, and a tortoise shell in the middle panel, placed there as if settled on a flower. Mark the as if, for here we have an example of exact knowledge on the part of those two admirable little girls, because they say that actually the wrong side of the bug is shown. It should have been the underside, if seen as it is in profile. But Bosch evidently found a wing or two in the corner cobweb of his casement and showed the prettier upper surface in depicting his incorrectly folded insect. I mean, I don't give a hoot for the esoteric meaning, for the myth behind the moth, for the masterpiece baiter who makes Bosch express some Bosch of his time. I'm allergic to allegory, and I'm quite sure he was just enjoying himself by cross-breeding casual fancies just for the fun of the contour and color. And what we have to study, as I was telling your cousins, is the joy of the eye, the feel and the taste of the woman-sized strawberry that you embrace with him, or the exquisite surprise of an unusual orifice. But you are not following me. You want me to go, so that you may interrupt her beauty sleep, lucky beast. Apropos, I have not been able to alert Lucette, who is somewhere in Italy, but I've managed to trace Marina to Tsitsikar, flirting there with the Bishop of Belokonsk. She will arrive in the late afternoon, wearing, no doubt, pleureuse, very becoming, and we shall then travel à trois to Lador, because I don't think... Was he perhaps under the influence of some bright Chilean drug? That torrent was simply unstoppable, a crazy spectrum, a talking palate. No, really, I don't think we should bother Ada in her agavia. He is, I mean, Vinelander is, the scion, S-C-I-O-N, of one of those great Varangians who had conquered the Copper Tartars or Red Mongols, or whoever they were, who had conquered some earlier bronze riders before we introduced our Russian roulette and Irish loo at a lucky moment in the history of Western casinos. I am hideously sorry, said Vaughn. What with Uncle Dan's death and your state of excitement, sir. But my girlfriend's coffee is getting cold, and I can't very well stumble into our bedroom with all that infernal paraphernalia. I'm leaving. After all, we haven't seen each other since when? August? At any rate, I hope she's prettier than the Cordula you had here before, volatile boy. Volatina, perhaps? Or Dragonara? He definitely smelled of ether. Please, please, please go. My gloves, cloak. Thank you. Can I use your WC? No? All right. I'll find one elsewhere. Come over as soon as you can, and we'll meet Marina at the airport around 4, and then whiz to the wake and... And here, Ada entered. Not naked, oh no. In a pink peignoir, so as not to shock Valerio, comfortably combing her hair, sweet and sleepy. She made the mistake of crying out, Boje moi, and darting back into the dusk of the bedroom. All was lost in that one chink of a second. Or better, come at once, both of you, because I'll cancel my appointment and go home right now. He spoke, or thought he spoke with the self-control and the clarity of enunciation which so frightened and mesmerized blunderers, blusterers, a voluble broker, a guilty schoolboy. Especially so now, when everything had gone to the hell curse, Kuchertiam Sobachim, of Jeroen Anthnisund van Aken, and the multi aspetti affascinanti of his Enigmatica Arte, as Dan explained with a last sigh to Dr. Nikulin, and to Nurse Bellabestia, Bess, to whom he bequeathed a trunkful of museum catalogues
and his second-best catheter.